The Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
In April, we learned about James Douglas, the man which Douglas, Arizona was named for. He's also pioneering the Hunt Douglas, a process for extracting copper ore, as well as a vital part in the development and growth of Phelps Dodge. His son, known as Rawhide Jimmy, named the town of Clemence, Arizona, after the French Prime Minister George Clemence and a personal friend of his. The town was built as a company town for the miners of the United Verde Extension Copper Smelter, UXV. Today, Clemence is a town nearly lost to time. The only remnants of the original town are a school. Now it's the Clemence Museum. And there's a post office slash bank that was moved next to the museum to prevent demolition. The museum opens today at 10 a.m. It's located on Willard Street, just a half a mile south of Old Town Cottonwood. So you go get a tour of the Clemence Museum before you hit your wine tasting trail this morning at Cottonwood.
We're here this morning with special guest Dr. David Dean. Back by popular demand, we've had him in so many times. It always makes for an interesting show. We've really had the heads rolling in the aisle this morning.
That's right. We've tried to throw people
rough.
A lifeline, but the rope is only so long.
And we're here talking about Dr. Dean is assistant professor, teaches history at Grand Canyon University. And we felt like with current events, hoping that the current event didn't turn bad by the time we got on air, and with everybody escaping the heat, we were going to do a segment this morning at 7 o'clock on historical jailbreaks in the state of Arizona.
Yes, and so that got me thinking about a number of kind of characters and whatnot. Of course, one of the most famous little roundups, it wasn't necessarily a jailbreak, but certainly they were on the lam like the like we have in the current news stories, is the Dillinger Gang made an appearance down in Tucson. They were hanging out down there, and they were spied and turned in, and the police showed up. And as they were kind of hanging around there on 927 North 2nd Street, 2nd Avenue in Tucson, in a little home there, the police rolled up on him and arrested the whole Dillinger gang, including Dillinger himself, called him in for custody. Dillinger's only comment was really that hick police down there caught us. They didn't do much time. They were released pending other court dates and whatnot, and Dillinger was about 6 months later gunned down in Chicago. But prior to that, he had a little episode down in Tucson, you know.
And they have a Dillinger's Day event in Tucson every year.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Tucson.
They celebrate
They celebrate some pretty strange things, I guess, down there.
Tucson's been kind of the focal of other famous or infamous.
Yeah, well, one of the most infamous from Tucson is what we call, what's known as the Pied Piper of Tucson, a guy by the name of Charles Schmid, or Smitty, as he was nicknamed. He was a kind of a teenager, loper, interloper kind of person who was amongst kind of that kind of hang around youth culture in the early 60s and whatnot. You know, they'd go and hang out at the drag races on Speedway and cruise around. You know how kids just back in those days, they didn't have internet, they didn't have Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And so just the disaffected youth community down there. And he was a guy who didn't do really well in school, was kind of picked on because he was only like 5'3". And so he decided to reinvent himself, to make himself kind of more panache, so to speak, more Tony, as they would say. He kind of modeled himself after Elvis, kind of the bad boy type. He put lists in his shoes to make himself look taller. And he was a smooth talker. He could get the girls and all that kind of stuff. And the teenage community down there really, really kind of – he had a kind of a pall over them. And he decided that he wanted to commit a murder just to see what it felt like. And so he convinced some of his friends – to lure a girl out into the desert where he committed the crime and got his friends to kind of help him cover it up. And then later, when they were kind of nervous and he thought that they might rat him out, he killed one of his friend's girlfriends and her sister, and buried similar manner and buried them out in the desert and whatnot. And it was another friend that he was bragging to that later on was worried that his girlfriend was going to get killed. So he turned him in. And so he ended up going to prison. But he had this, you know, jet black hair, and he kind of had painted a mole on his face to look, you know, more sinister, wore black leather jacket. And he was
This is in the 1970s.
This is late 50s, early 60s is when he committed these crimes. He went to jail in 63 and had several attempts at escaping the prison down at Florence, which he did eventually have a successful escape, made it all the way up to Tempe, Arizona, and was out for a couple of weeks, had stolen a car, tied some people up, got up there, and he was finally captured and returned. And not too long after he was returned to incarceration did other prisoners decide that they'd had enough of this kind of strange individual, and they stabbed him 47 times, including lacerating his kidney and stabbing him in the eye.
Oh.
Ow. That'll make you see better.
Whoa. Where are we going to go from there, Doc?
Well, you know, we can always talk a little bit about Winnie Ruth Judd, the famous trunk murderess. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the murders because most people are familiar with her story a little bit. She was in a kind of a lover's quarrel, murdered two individuals, and then to dispose of the bodies, she dismembered them and packed them into big steamer trunk cases and went to the depot, the Santa Fe Depot in Phoenix, and booked tickets to Los Angeles. This was about 2 days after the murder. Well, when she arrived in Los Angeles, the trunks were leaking. And so somebody said, we need to look inside those trunks because there might be something in there suspicious. And when they did, they found the bodies and they arrested her and whatnot. So she ended up spending quite a number of years between 1930 and the 1990s or so in jail. She was incarcerated for a long time.
Did she ever escape?
She actually, because she was deemed kind of mentally ill, or that there was some extenuating circumstances, she spent a lot of her sentence at the Arizona Mental Hospital, and six times she escaped. one time she
was with it enough to escape.
One time she was actually given a key from a friend of hers, just gave her a key to the front door, and she walked out. Another time she wandered out in 1939. This is early on in her incarceration. She actually got a bus and went all the way down to Yuma before police caught up with her there. She was still in her pajamas and barefoot. In 1947, she wandered off in broad daylight and was picked up at a nearby hotel resort area. In 1951, somehow she managed to get out, and authorities in Phoenix spotted her, recognized her, and returned her back to incarceration. In February of 1952, she got out, was out for 5 days, and she stayed at a friend's home for a while, and eventually she turned herself back in. She escaped in Thanksgiving one year and went and had Thanksgiving dinner and came back. And then in October of 1962, she escaped and went to San Francisco and lived in San Francisco for 6.5 years, actually serving as a household maid and for a family under an assumed name. Applied for a driver's license, and somewhere along the way, somebody made a couple connections, and next thing you know, they returned her back to custody in 1969.
So how do you?
How'd you like to be the homeowner in San Francisco that found out this is who's been in your house cleaning?
I guess they didn't have background checks back then.
The trunk murderers, the famous trunk murderers, was your cleaning lady kind of thing. It's just crazy all the different kind of characters that come about from our stories and jailbirds and jailbreaks kind of a thing.
Man, here with Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University. Well, let's kind of round this topic up on a higher note.
On a higher note?
Yes.
Are you talking
no more heads falling off. No more chopped up bodies in a shipping trunk.
Are you in a love mood?
How about Giovanni?
Are you in a love mood, Rosie? Giovanni, the world's greatest lover. He gets that kind of a headline to him. Giovanni Vigliotto was a was a man, again, somebody you probably would pass by every day and wouldn't think much about. He was kind of a little bit chunkier than I am and had kind of a big dark shock of hair, but he was kind of like maybe George Costanza with a full head of hair, right? And but he had a way of sweet-talking the girls. And as it turns out, he was married 105 times. He had
any divorces in there, or he just kept
no divorces.
Wow,
27 states, 14 different countries. He had wives around the world, and he was a flea market dealer. And what he would do is he would sweet talk these women. He would get them to marry him. He would then say, "Okay, why don't we move to another location?" They'd pack up their belongings in a truck, and they would get ready to leave. He would give them money and say, "Okay, meet me at where we're going to. And I'm going to make a stop and pick up a few extra things from a deal or whatnot, and I'll meet you there." And then he would never show up.
So he stole from all those ladies.
All those, their households. And then he would go to a flea market somewhere, set up shop, and sell all their belongings.
What a dog.
Yeah. So this one woman in Indiana was taken for $49,000 of her personal property, and she said, "I'm not going to let this guy get away with it." So she tracked him down over 11 states, found him in Florida. Her best friend and her went on this big search, found him in Florida, and she was going to let him have it. But her friend, you know, said, "Maybe we ought to call the authorities." Turns out at the same time, the last woman that he had married, Patricia Gardner, was a resident here in Arizona, had filed a case against him, a suit against him. And so because of that case pending, he was extradited here where he was found guilty. They found out that he had as many as 120 different aliases. They couldn't even figure out what his real birthday was. But he came back here and he was sentenced to 28 years in prison, fined for $336,000. And he spent the rest of his time in Arizona, died in prison in 1991.
Well, you're exactly right. I pulled his image up. You described him perfectly.
For the older audience, he's kind of like Dom DeLuise with a lot of hair.
Yeah, just exactly like. All right. Well, the topic was jailbreaks and escaping the heat.
Labor Day, hard labor.
Labor Day, hard labor. So we put our Arizona local historical twist expert on the topic. And that's what we came up with. So,
and boy, did we twist it in the wind there, so to speak. I'm waiting for Romy to jump in.